2 in the Middle. I'm Joey Block. Hope you had a good Christmas and a happy holiday season. If you are Jewish or are celebrating Kwanzaa, happy Hanukkah and Kwanzaa to you. I know that you're still in the midst of your celebration, so hope you are enjoying your celebration. Appreciate you sharing some time with us here as we go through the big moments of 2024 right here on this show. And if you're celebrating Christmas, hope you're recovering well from the eggnog hangover, and hope you're not too much of a sugar high from those candy canes. But we are days away from New Year's, so we're about to go into a new year here. So this is the time of year we like to look back on the year that was. This is part two of our special 2024 A Year in Review edition of In the Middle. As 2024 wraps up, it's time to look back at the big moments that were on this show and the year that was. This week, we'll reflect on some of the biggest moments that happened right here on this show, from big time interviews to surprising admissions, all happening on In the Middle, believe it or not, and what they could mean for the year to come, because some of these stories are not going away at all, which is shocking to many, considering we had such a big year in news, and some people could argue a transformational year in politics. So we're going to go through some of those moments here and play them back for you so you can get your gist of In the Middle. And maybe some of these will be precursors to next year. We'll have to see. But one of those moments involved what some might say was the biggest story of the year, the presidential election. There were so many twists and turns this election cycle. As one candidate would say, they could make your head spin. That included President Biden dropping his re-election bid and Vice President Harris jumping into the race, clinching enough delegates to win the Democratic nomination at the party's national convention. She often faced criticism of not being accessible enough to the press. Well, Elizabeth Mayor Chris Bowlwage, who initially wanted Biden to stay in the race and then eventually went on to back Harris, defended her, saying she didn't need to do interviews. But also, he kind of had an interesting and shocking answer to this question about his own policies on doing interviews and the way he's interacted with the media. Here's a bit of that exchange. Shifting the gear specifically to Vice President Harris, she has faced an onslaught of criticism for not doing any policy-driven sit-down interviews or news conferences since jumping into the race at the top of the ticket. Although she has done some press gaggles here and there in between events, most of those don't last very long. Should she make herself more accessible to the press?
She will, but she should do it on her own terms. The press is never your friend. The press is always trying to trip you up, make you say something that can come back and haunt you. The press is never going to throw you softballs, and I get it. That's their job. I very reluctantly do interviews, and I've been around a long time. I'm doing one with you because I did some background, and so I've agreed to do it, but I don't see the benefit to doing interviews, to be honest with you.
And that's an interesting take there. I want to dive into that a little more. Why, as a politician or a mayor, do you not feel that way? Because some people are the opposite. Some people love to do the interviews. They almost seek them out in a way. Why you, ooh, as a mayor of a very large city in New Jersey, say, you know what, interviews, they're just not really for me?
You know, when I first won the job in 1992, I used to wake up in the morning hoping my name was in the Star Ledger. Now I do my day's work and hope it's never in the Star Ledger. And as far as doing interviews go, they serve no purpose. They don't have an ability to satisfy any of your constituents' problems. So I choose not to do them.
Now that President-elect Trump has won another term, He's quickly moving to fill key roles in his next administration, as well as other minor positions within the federal government. One of those is the U.S. Attorney for New Jersey. There has been a number of names floated for the position, including New Jersey 1st Legislative District Republican State Senator Mike Testa. Earlier this year, before the election, I pressed him on whether he would consider taking on the role. Let's play the scenario here that former President Trump does win the presidential election, whether or not he wins New Jersey. But let's say he wins. He's going to have to appoint some people. Your name has been circulated as a possible U.S. attorney if he were to get back in the White House. If he asked you to serve in that capacity, would you accept?
I would have to take a long and hard look at that offer. I think that's a similar offer to, you know, one that is akin to an offer that you cannot refuse.
So you definitely would consider it?
I would strongly consider that, yes.
With the presidential election past us, Biden, in his final weeks, is working to fulfill key initiatives spearheaded by his administration. But he is also making moves that some would consider controversial. That would also include pardoning his son, Hunter Biden, from all crimes dating back 10 years, even if the Justice Department haven't brought up any charges for those alleged acts. The pardon was met with backlash from both sides of the aisle, including newly sworn in New Jersey Democratic Senator Andy Kim. It is something that I spoke to him about right as he was being sworn in, and let's just say he wasn't very happy about the pardon. You brought up repeatedly this deep distrust in government. That is a theme we've heard a lot throughout the campaign, and that's what we're starting to hear in Democratic circles with the recent news that President Biden has pardoned his son Hunter on federal gun and tax charges. Your party has been repeating the mantra of no one is above the law when it comes to President-elect Trump's legal challenges. The Attorney General of the state of New Jersey, Matt Platkin, has called out the president for making this pardon, saying it weakens the fragile trust in our institution. Given what has transpired, does this pardon undercut the argument that people like you and other Democrats have been saying about the president-elect?
Yeah, first of all, I'll just say, you know, while I sympathize with President Biden as a father, you know, for what his family has gone through, I am disappointed in the decision on the pardon. I don't think it was the right move to make. And I think it gets to that deeper sense we were just talking about this distrust, this sense that, like, you know, that the politics is just some exclusive club for, you know, the well-off and the well-connected, and that they operate on a different set of rules. I think this reinforces that. So, I think this is something that definitely definitely is going to further that sense of distrust, give people more reason to believe that, you know, things are done in that kind of capacity for, you know, for those that are in power and have the right connections. So I think that's why I found it to be a really disappointing decision.
The county organizational line was in sharp focus this year, with Kim filing a lawsuit that is leading to its demise. It was a mechanism that allowed party bosses to give their favorite candidates preferential ballot positions, but this year, Democrats were forced to run in office blocks. This required candidates to be grouped according to what they were running for rather than which party organization was backing them, including the county parties. Republicans were not included in this decision, infuriating many of them. But New Jersey 6th District congressional candidate Scott Fegler defended the line, saying it gives candidates a necessary boost. A federal judge has struck down the county organizational line for this year's Democratic primary here in New Jersey. Democrats from Middlesex County and Camden are trying to appeal this decision. New Jersey Republicans have also filed a brief in this appeal, Despite this decision not directly affecting Republicans at this time, the county clerk in Burlington County has opted out of using the line for both parties and instead plans to use office block balloting. Your primary opponent, Greg Mealy, along with 3rd Congressional District candidate Shirley Maya Kuzik and Senate candidate Albert Harshaw, have filed a lawsuit of their own in a state superior court claiming a system deemed unconstitutional for Democrats is being left in place for Republicans unjustly. You have secured all the county lines in your district. Should a state judge grant these candidates' request?
I don't think so. You know, and I'm going to speak specifically to my my opponent, right, which is Greg Mealy. And he made a comment on Twitter, I believe it was, that he wasn't invited to a convention at the Monmouth County. Greg was running for the Senate position, and the day before the deadline, the signatures, right, there's processes here. So you start off at the convention, and to get invited to the convention, you have to submit a letter stating that you wish, right, and they supply back, hey, we've received it, you know, please reach out to at least 10 county committee members and get their endorsement to be invited to the convention. That was due on a Tuesday. On a Monday night, he decided to make the switch and never was able to submit the appropriate paperwork. So yes, I came into the process late. I still got what was required to me to be invited to the convention. He was invited to the Middlesex Convention. The, let's say 200 or so county committee members of the Middlesex Convention got to vote. I had won that vote. I believe it was 66 to 18, something around those lines. So pretty decisively, I think it was 2-1 or something around those, something around that range. So to be so brash, right? But I beat him kind of fair square, right? So I'm excited to use the county lines, which allows me to be more strategic for the general election. So it's a little disappointing, right? I do understand the constitutional element of it, right? But here we are in an election season, right? And the goalposts are set, but they keep moving further back, which is a pretty wild and crazy concept.
Speaking of the county organizational line, a number of candidates running for governor have come out against it, including Newark Democratic Mayor Ross Baraka. He has said, if elected governor, bold progressive change would be a top priority of his. This even goes as far as looking at reparations for African American New Jerseyans. I asked him about what that would look like when he was on the show earlier this year. Take a listen. Now, I know we're running low on time here, but I want to go back to something you said earlier. You said there the segregation in this state is deep, and you said we need to close the gap both from wealth-wise. There's been an argument, and you've probably heard it a lot amongst certain people, that, you know, African-Americans have historically not had the same economic advantages as, let's say, white people do and all that. I'm sure, obviously, from why reporters keep asking you about winning the white vote and all that, there have been people who have called for reparations to happen. And there's even been some movement on that in New Jersey. Are you a supporter of that? Is that something that New Jersey would do? And would you sign that into law as governor?
Well, there is no law to sign. Right now, people at least are asking to have a discussion. And I think that we in this liberal state have been allergic to even having a discussion. I think that that is the beginning. And that's what people are at least fighting for initially, to allow us to have a discussion about reparations and the history and of disenfranchisement in the state of New Jersey. I think that that has to happen. I mean, people seem to be allergic to that, as if people are saying that they're responsible for slavery. No, the inadvertent kind of effects and some deliberate effects of institutional racism that exists as a result of that still impacts families in this state. And we need to figure that out, not just as a matter of social a historical preference, but as a matter of economic prosperity for the state and for individual families. And we should have this discussion. And to be afraid to have that discussion is undemocratic in my mind.
Do you think reparations are absolutely necessary? I know you say we need to have the discussion, but are they a necessary part and something you could see yourself being a key initiative in your administration?
Sure. I think they are necessary, 100%, just as it was necessary for the Marshall Plan to exist after, you know, the World War, as it was necessary for other individuals in this state, or groups in the state, in this country, excuse me, who were harmed, who received reparations because of the harm that was done to them. So it is absolutely necessary. How that looks, how that plays out, what that resembles is something that the smart people in the state are going to have to come together, discuss, and figure out. But that is extremely important to close the wealth gap that people are saying are going to take over 200 years to do, which will harm more generations of folk who are trying to make the American dream real for them in the state of New Jersey.
This idea of a segregated state is something that has carried through this campaign so far. NJEA President and Montclair Mayor Sean Spiller touched upon this when he was on the show talking about his campaign and the challenges he says lie ahead in his quest to become the first black governor in New Jersey's history. Here's some excerpts of that conversation. Now, moving to November 2025, if you make it to the general election, you will be going up against history. Neither major party has won a third consecutive term to the governor's mansion here in New Jersey in a really long time. What's your path to defy history?
Look, I think if you start talking about history, I understand there's a few other layers to it as well. I get it. We've never elected a black governor ever either in New Jersey. And that's another barrier that, you know, has to be broken here. And I'd be fighting against that. There are challenges, I think, galore in terms of obstacles that always come up. And especially for some candidates more than others. And certainly given our history and not only the state, but nation. But I will say this. Look, you know, the defying the odds is all about, again, talking to people, sharing your vision, and making sure you're bringing forward, you know, platforms that support, you know, their interests and what they need.
You mentioned a possible obstacle for you would be that you would be the first black governor in this state's history. And you mentioned there hasn't been any before. Why do you think that is at this point? Is it just like you haven't really found the guy that New Jerseyans have fallen in love with, or is there a deeper reason for that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not going to put it all in New Jersey here, right? When you look right now as to how many black individuals have ever been governor of any state, and I think it speaks for itself, right? You know, that's part of the challenge and problem that we see not just here in New Jersey, but throughout the nation. So those barriers are there. I think it's important to recognize that and understand that is a real thing. But it's also about making sure our message gets out there and people understand that you're a governor. You know, fighting for this position because you want to bring our voice, all of our voices, to the space to help make decisions, but also understanding that, yeah, it does matter. You know, being the son of immigrant parents who chose to live here in New Jersey, brought my brother and I here when we were really, really young, and instilled in us the values of what it's like to be here, but also understood my father having to be away for months at a time, trying to earn enough to support us, my mom having to get another job to care for us. You know, that's the struggle. That's the real piece of New Jersey, right? A great place to live, wonderful schools, you know, your great communities. If you can afford to live wherever you want to live, and you know, but we also have the challenges of it's often too hard to afford whatever it is you're trying to afford, and you've got to be away for so long to do it. That's a lived experience that's got to come through. But part of that also is, yes, you know, we are still as diverse as we are in a relatively segregated state, and you know, one that you know, the facts are the facts, has never elected a black governor, and you know, that's something we definitely have to acknowledge as we do this work as well.
Another key issue in the governor's race is the plastic bag ban. If former Republican Assemblyman Jack Ciarelli is elected, he says the ban will be repealed. Fellow Republican candidate State Senator John Bramnick says he's open to the idea as well. This isn't the only type of bill the governor signed during his administration regarding the environment. The plastic bag ban that he signed into law has received some criticism since its implementation nearly 2 years ago. A recent study shows plastic consumption in the state tripled since the ban was put into effect. One of your likely opponents Former Assemblyman Jack Cittarelli has vowed to reverse it if he gets elected. Now, I know that the numbers are not going to necessarily be on your side in the legislature, but let's say they were. Let's say they are. Would you do the same as what Cittarelli is proposing?
That bill that passed was a compromise between all of the retailers and the environmentalists. I would have to look at some other option because I'm not sure this is working based on the research. So I'd have to look at whether or not this really had any significant effect on the environment. And my sense is no. If that's the case, then I would certainly go to the legislature and say, listen, this had no significant effect on the environment. It's a pain in the neck for customers, so we should reverse it. But I'd have to look at all the environmental studies and determine whether or not it's really significant. My guess is it hasn't been. And it just, I'm not sure it really works. So I haven't thought about it much, except when I forget my bag when I go to the supermarket, which is always.
But just to be clear, you would consider revising, if not reversing.
I would absolutely. I look at whether or not it had real environmental impact, and there's studies that say that people are buying these reusable plastic bags that apparently create more problems. I'm starting to see stores give out bags anyway, but I have to take a look at it. Once again, that was a long fought environmental policy that they joined with the business community and came up with this. And once the business community was on board, and that's how it got done. If the stores had rejected it completely, I don't think they would have ever gotten enough votes. But this was a compromise bill, so 100% I'd look at whether it really works. If it doesn't do anything for the environment, I would try to get the votes to reverse it.
NJ Transit plagued commuters this past summer, from delays to cancellations and even fare hikes. This issue has permeated the governor's race. And former New Jersey 3rd District Republican State Senator Ed Durr wasn't shy about discussing what he calls the failures of the transit agency. Durr went in depth about it when he was on the show and even brought up other ways to fund the agency. But it wasn't that part of the conversation which really caught eyeballs. There was another thing that he says, you know what? Maybe we shouldn't provide much funding for. Check out what he said. Now, I know we're running low on time here, but I have to get your take on another transportation issue that is affecting this state. NJ Transit is about to implement a fare hike of 15% effective July 1st with a 3% annual increase expected. A part of this price hike is allowing all tickets to expire after 30 days of purchase, which is a departure from the way it is right now, where they are essentially good forever. After the backlash from customers, the agency did decide to issue a refund policy for those who bought tickets prior to June 1st. If you were governor, would this type of thing be happening under your watch?
Absolutely not. We would find other ways and methods, you know, because there's definitely waste in the New Jersey government. And I don't think that the New Jersey needs to keep footing another fare increase. And Governor Murphy had promised this wouldn't happen, and then he allowed it to happen anyway. And this is just another promise that he had said and broke, you know, just like he had said he wasn't going to raise taxes, and he raised taxes. He continues to say things and then goes back on it after the vote. So I would definitely find other ways to get this done. And transit would definitely be one of my priorities to get back in order.
As a state senator, you obviously had to vote on budget proposals, and you were a big part in making them law by casting your vote for them, whether you voted against or for, but you were a part of that process, essentially. Where do you see the money coming from to fund this agency? Because right now, the Murphy administration wants to go after corporations and also get them to fund it.
Yeah, corporations who will not, you know, benefit from any of this tax revenue, you know, because this transit is going to be for, you know, a select group, And he's charging all corporations in New Jersey, not just the ones who would benefit from this. So I find that to be wrong. And like I said, there is waste in government. Trust me, there is waste. You know, we spend billions and billions of dollars on pork barrel stuff, and that needs to be cut out. And we need to trim the fat. There is no reason our budget needed to increase $20 billion over the last 5 years. So, yeah, there's a lot of waste, and that would definitely be a priority to trim the fat. In fact, I had spoken to a couple individuals. We would definitely put together a team that would precisely do that, go after, you know, auditing agencies and finding where all the waste is and restructuring things.
Based on your experiences as a former state senator, is there any pork right now which you can identify that you would say would absolutely go under a Durr administration?
I don't like the money we're giving Rutgers University, especially after this recent display of anti-Semitism that was allowed to take place on the campus. I think that there is waste in each district who goes in and does little pork barrel things of, you know, I mean, just speaking of one budget, I recall there was the French Museum that we gave money to. There's little things in this area that can be nitpicked and add up. There's waste in the school funding. The funding needs to be corrected. And these are things that would, you know, I'm not an accountant, but I can see waste. And could you imagine living your life and budgeting your household like the government does? You'd never survive. And why are we able to do that in the government? So it's ridiculous. There needs to be accountability, and you know, it needs to be corrected, because we couldn't live the way the government does. I'll guarantee you that.
You mentioned how you don't like what Rutgers has been up to and all the money that's been going to that university. That's in light of obviously the pro-Palestinian protests that have been taking place on that campus. And now the university says that they're going to be looking at possibly divesting from Israeli companies or ties with the Jewish state. Do you think Rutgers needs to be defunded as a result of this, as part of these negotiations that they had with the protesters to get the encampments off the campus?
Absolutely. I think that should definitely be one of the priorities looked at. I mean, I think that $1 billion to Rutgers is ridiculous, and I definitely would be, you know, in favor of cutting the fat on that.
Well, that about does it for me this week. Thank you so much for joining me as always. To stay in touch with what's going on the show, all you have to do is follow me on social media, which you can do on X at @Block_Joey. Again, my last name is spelled BLOCH_Joey. You can also check me out on Instagram at joey.block.39. Again, that is at joey.block.39. Now, in case you just have found the show for the very first time, like, oh my God, I love the show, it's so great, but where do I find it? Well, here's what you need to do. You have to go to that browser of yours. You need to type in FoxSportsRadioNewJersey.com/podcast. Again, that is FoxSportsRadioNewJersey.com/podcast. You put that in, and it will take you right to the Fox Sports New Jersey podcast page. You're going to scroll down until you find In the Middle with Joey Block. You're going to click on that, and all the episodes will be there. You'll see the newest one at the top and the older ones at the bottom. We typically put out new episodes every Friday afternoon at 3 p.m. Now, before we go, I just want to thank you all so much for listening to In the Middle the past year. It's really been an honor. We've had a great year, a big year, in fact, for In the Middle. We got an award. We got some recognition from other people. And I think there are some surprises that we have in store for the new year. I can't really go into it yet, but you're going to see me in some places you wouldn't think you had before. What do I mean? Well, you're just going to have to wait till the new year to find out. But it's some exciting stuff that we're working on. And we hope you continue to engage with this podcast, to tune in every week. And we have an exciting year as we're going into the governor's race. It's been a pleasure doing this for the last 4 years now. Can you believe it? We're going into our fifth year. That's crazy, considering I never thought it would last this long. You know, I started this in my basement in 2020 on my college radio station, thinking not much is ever going to come to this. And I had the incredible opportunity to talk to so many amazing people across the state, whether it was activists, governors, former governors, senators, former members of Congress, members of Congress, candidates, you name it, I got to talk to them. And it's really been an honor. And it's really been an honor that you have engaged with me every week, that you've tuned in to see what the conversation is, what the latest issues are, and informing yourselves in a way where it's not about the left or the right. It's about just getting the facts and letting you decide. So thank you very much for tuning in this year and the past 4 years. And we hope to continue on for the years to come and continue to put out content that informs you and maybe inspires you to do something that you haven't thought about doing before. Now, we also want to wish you and your family a very happy new year. We'll be continuing on into the new year with some coverage of the governor's race and the state assembly there, and even maybe some other races that you haven't thought about that are pretty important. So we are going to dive into all those races. So you're definitely going to want to stay engaged with In the Middle. Thank you so much for tuning in. It has been a pleasure. We'll be back in the new year with more In the Middle right here on Fox Sports, New Jersey.